Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, one of my favorite people of all time, Chauncey DeVega from Salon.com, host of the Chauncey DeVega Show. He's going to be here with me to talk about the Buffalo shooting and, of course, the spread of this great replacement theory that Republicans have been pushing for far too long. And we've got primary news. Madison Cawthorn is officially a lame duck member of Congress, and the group that took him down says don't count them out, folks, because they're coming after Lauren Boebert next. And of course, we have Ted Cruz and his continued assault on American democracy and a Supreme Court ruling this past week, maybe the final nail in the campaign finance coffin. And Republicans are at each other's throats over how best to obstruct the Biden agenda. All that and more is coming up. And don't forget to get the full show every single week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. Make sure you subscribe at rofpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. The tragedy that took place in Buffalo, New York over this past weekend was sadly predictable. And we know that because the person that I am talking with right now, Chauncey DeVega from Salon.com, ChaunceyDeVega.com, host of the Chauncey DeVega Show, he and I have been warning this country about these dangers for many, many years now. Chauncey, thank you for coming back on Ring of Fire. Obviously, you're the best person I know to talk about this. You've been writing about it all week. And I do want to point something out here. I got on Facebook this morning, looked at my Facebook memories, and 6 years ago today, 6 years ago today, I interviewed you for Ring of Fire on Free Speech TV, talking about Donald Trump and the racism that he was really just bringing up to 11 within the Republican Party. So here we are 6 years later to the day, seeing the consequences of what this Republican Party is rapidly becoming. And not that it wasn't always this way, but what has happened has gotten so much worse than what you and I could have even predicted 6 years ago.
Time is broken, isn't it? None of this is new. It's wholly predictable. Doom. We're in more than a doom loop. I've written about this almost like a treadmill. And the question for me becomes, as I'm sure you've contemplated, other truth tellers, we can sound the alarm about Trump. We can tell the American people, as we have for years, about this disaster, this nightmare. But the depths of denial from the American mainstream news media, where one day they'll tell the truth about this disaster, then the other day go back to inside the Beltway horse race coverage that normalizes it. They've decided not to cover, I think it's an editorial decision, a clear one, not to cover Trump's rallies. I'm one of the few people writing about it. Trump at his rallies has basically repeated everything said in that horrific white supremacist terrorist manifesto, which, by the way, you can basically don't need to read it. Just listen to Fox News every night. Yet the levels of denial. So on one hand, I'm very disappointed in the American people. They're not rising to the challenge of this democracy crisis, this existential threat to their safety and security. And I say that on both sides of the color line. But maybe part of it is their elected officials, Biden and others, are not acting with the urgency now. That's for sure. The mainstream corporate media certainly isn't sounding the alarm. They want to look away and laugh at Trump. As I repeatedly say in my writings at Salon, the Chauncey DeVega Show, my other podcast, The Truth Report, Donald Trump is the most dangerous person in America today. And when he wins again, and it's going to be mighty close, because he's going to win by hook or crook if he runs, the same people ignoring this will sit back and be shocked and surprised. The same people saying, oh my God, Buffalo, how could it happen? This is unbelievable. Then we say January 6th. Then we list all the other white supremacist terrorist attacks during the age of Trump and before. The levels of denial are stunning. But then again, who does the blame? Do we blame the leaders or do we blame the followers?
That's a great question that, you know, obviously we don't have the answer for at the moment. And when we look at this manifesto, and, you know, people have picked this apart and they've kind of shown where it's almost word for word from a book, I think, that Tucker Carlson wrote. Tucker, of course, has pushed this great replacement theory. Elise Stefanik has pushed it. Matt Gaetz has pushed it. So many mainstream Republicans, mainstream Republican voices have pushed this thing that was once relegated to just the most despicable human beings this country has to offer, but it has become a mainstream view. And that's the big problem here that people have ignored as we've been watching this happen. You and I have spoken about this, I don't even know how many times. You know, 6 years ago when we spoke about it, that wasn't even the first time we did. The warnings have been there. We've been given them. Plenty of other folks have given them, but not enough people wanted to pay attention when everybody said, watch this road we're on because it leads in death and disaster. That's where it ends. And it continues that cycle. And that's what we're seeing. That's what happened this past weekend. And this kid told us this. He told us this in his manifesto that, again, basically read like the teleprompter over at Fox News.
Well, we also got to be careful of our language, right? He's a man, not a kid.
Yeah.
So the Washington Post, great story about what unfolded that day at that supermarket when that monster, that human demon, went in there, staked the place out, talked to the folk the day ahead of time, got to know him, went in there and murdered him. 10 black folk. Shot, murdered, killed savagely like that. And we saw even in that story, they referred to him as a teenager, a kid. We don't talk about black and brown folk who are literally children who commit crimes or even alleged to have commit crimes in this country as children. Never mind. When's the last time they described a Muslim terrorist as a kid? So that gets to the heart of the problem, right? The ways that white privilege operates all across the society, even to infantilize and minimize the actions of a white terrorist mass murderer. And again, part of the same process in certain mainstream media outlets, they still talk about Donald Trump's adult sons as kids, as boys. So we always got to get to the root of the tree, because what we saw there in Buffalo, that gets to before the founding of this country. None of this is new. This country was founded on two great birth defects, genocide against First Nations, enslavement of black people. Hell, they're still finding bodies. Still finding black and brown bodies and act surprised and shocked when you see this white supremacist terrorism, which, by the way, this great replacement stuff is also not new. It wouldn't resonate if there wasn't an audience for it. None of this is new. You had white folks who own black human property, and not just them, in this country's history, making arguments about white people being replaced. You go back to the 17th century. You go back to the 19th century. Madison Grant talking about the white race being replaced by the darker races. White slavers in this country said, oh, my God, we're being outbirthed. We're going to be outnumbered by black human property. None of this is new. But part of the problem is white privilege and white supremacy are so endemic to the society, even in the language we use, going back to calling this adult monster a kid. He's a man. They didn't call Trayvon a boy, Michael Brown a boy, a teenager. They called him men. That little black boy, little brother Stinney, that they executed in Texas. How old was he? 11? They had to sit him on dictionaries to electrocute him. Called him an adult. So white supremacy and white privilege are so deep in this society. It's the air that people inhale and breathe. You got to call it out everywhere you see it, from the day to day in language to how we think about who's really considered an American, because there's a lot of public opinion, social psychology research is an old finding that when, in particular, white Americans hear American, they think white. So the great replacement and this idea of to be white equals American, because the monster wrote about this in the manifesto, black people replacing real Americans, it ain't new. It's everywhere. What he did, and with these Republicans and the Fox News types, they put a new word on it, a new spin. They turned it up to 11 and they've mainstreamed it. But it is not a new idea. Not at all.
You know, I read several interesting things this week. First of all, the response from the right. And the response from the right wants to say, how dare you make this about race? Well, one, he did. He made that very clear. This is about race. They want to frame it as a mentally ill individual. This particular instance, this is not a mental health issue. This is a pure racism issue. He told us that. Let's not ignore what he said. So that's point number one. Point number two, and you touched on this, is that an expert in mass shootings explained in a report that came out this week from NPR most of these mass shootings that we see, these are not in the moment crimes. Okay, this isn't somebody just snapped, somebody had a bad day, they go out and do these things, which is another way people write off these mass shootings. As you pointed out, this individual staked the place out, was there the day before. He plotted this. He drove 3.5 hours to get there, specifically picked that target because he knew who was going to be there. So that is another thing that goes to these framing issues. Do we have a mental health crisis in the United States? Absolutely. Is this a part of it? Absolutely not. This was also not a heat of the moment thing. This guy staked this place out. He knew exactly who he was targeting, where they would be, when they would be there. And that's when he made his move. So that's, you know, two talking points that we need to kind of get rid of when speaking about this particular incident in Buffalo.
Well, we have a guns crisis in this country, number one.
Very true.
And most people who are, quote unquote, mentally ill are not violent. They're more likely to be victims of violence, especially by this country's police, other law enforcement. And we got to be careful, right? So you mentioned, yes, the white right, these Republican fascists who have zero credibility on any of these issues, because today's Republican Party and larger conservative movement is the largest white supremacist, white identity organization in the world. So they don't take anything that they say seriously. These are not intellectually honest people. These are not morally grounded people. These are not ethically grounded people. They're advancing a cause of white supremacy, keeping black and brown folk from voting, stealing elections, a new Jim Crow. And it's not enough has been written about this. The attack on women's reproductive rights and freedoms is part of this white supremacist project, basically, to control women's bodies, including white women's bodies, to maintain, quote unquote, read the Supreme Court opinion that was leaked. The language echoes this horrific, foul white supremacist manifesto about birth rates. What did one of the judges say? He wrote the opinion, the right-wing judge. He said, oh, a domestic supply of babies.
Yeah.
Well, speak plainly, white babies, right? So this white supremacy is throughout every aspect of American life and society. But when the right wing, the Fox News, the Republican fascists and others cry mental health, mental illness, number one, don't engage them because they're dishonest. And number two, you flip it and say, ain't that an interesting thing? When was the last time you used that as an excuse, defense, deflection, when as a black or brown person, one of the few who actually get involved in these types of mass shootings? Did they ever say that about a Muslim terrorist? Oh, it must be a mental health issue. No, it's conveniently summoned when it's a white supremacist terrorist who goes out and kills people. It's always some other excuse as opposed to he, you, and they believe the same things. It's just a matter of the valence and how it's presented. Similar, if not identical, core values. Read that manifesto or read people who've commented on it and annotated it. It's almost verbatim. You can hear on Fox News any night a Donald Trump rally, these Republican officials.
You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I hate to always come back to her, but she is, you know, she's the voice of the Republican Party. She came out on Wednesday, I believe it was. Maybe it was Tuesday, but she's on One America's Voice talking about, or Real America's Voice, talking about, you want to see racism? Look at Muriel Bowser, mayor of Washington, D.C. She's the real racist, Marjorie Taylor Greene says, because of what's happening to those poor January 6th people who are sitting in jail. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of those people who's trying to say that, no, us white people, we're totally great. We're the victims of this racism that clearly is coming from black people against us. We're the victim. That is the level of, God, I struggle to find the words to describe it, but that's what we're up against. They're able to flip this narrative so quickly. And again, we have the shooter's words. They're written down. You can't misconstrue that when you're reading direct quotes from it. And days after this, hours really, they're already trying to flip the script and say, no. White people are the victims here.
Again, not new. That narrative of white victimology, white, we call it now reverse racism, that goes back to the beginning of the race concept. And we got to be very careful when we engage that woman, I don't even say their names, that MTG lady and the other ones, right? That you have to understand, I caution your listeners, I caution other folk who listen to my podcast, Mirror Writings, when you deal with white supremacy, you have to understand that the race concept itself is based on a lie. White supremacy, therefore, is based on a lie. Fascism is based on a lie. It's hostile to the truth. So when you interact or approach or interrogate any of these types of claims, you have to begin from that premise. So she's going to lie. She's going to distort reality. And unfortunately, these twisted beliefs, the absurdity of believing that somehow white people in America are oppressed in any way, when white folks control every political, social, economic aspect of this country, that don't mean every white brother and sister is privileged in the same way. That would be absurd. But as a group, white folks certainly enjoy a disproportionate amount of power. And that's what Trumpism, that's what this Republican fascist movement is about. Maintaining, keeping, expanding the control of American society in every dimension for white folk. That's what this is about. And not all white folks. They're elect select few, the MAGA elect. That's what this is about. And you can look at the public opinion data. We actually know repeatedly, number one, that racism and white supremacy and anti-black and brown affect sentiment was the primary motivation for Trump voters. It's a movement based on racism and white supremacy, white racial resentment. And Trump voters in particular are much more likely, I think it's actually 60 or 70%. We can look it up. It's very accessible data. Are much more likely to believe that white people and not black or brown people are the real victims of racism in this country. It's absurd. You and I, reasonable, intelligent folk who are grounded in reality, laugh. This is crazy. But you have a whole movement, tens of millions of people, the vast majority of whom are white, but not all, because you got some black and brown folk doing the work of white supremacy and fascism, because they're trying to earn a particular type of whiteness. See Ted Cruz, for example. That's his whole project. So you and I can say this is crazy, but this is their world. But always go back to fascism and white supremacy and racism are based on lies and absurdity. That's how you keep yourself from going crazy.
So how do we try to combat this, though? You know, I mean, when we're up against these kinds of things here, and as you said, you know, you really do have millions of people in this country who buy into it. Fox News selling it to them every night and they're eating it up. They can't help themselves. They love it. And it's just further pushing them down that path. What do we do? Because there is no, you know, really amalgam of that in the non-racist sector, right? I mean, we don't have that. MSNBC is the only national, I guess, left-leaning outlet out there, you know, that's a corporate media, obviously. There's plenty of lefty, you know, websites and news sites and YouTube channels and all of that, but it's not enough. It's certainly not enough. It's terrifyingly not enough. So how do we do this? I mean, is there anything that can be done? Is, I guess, the question. And I don't even know if there is an answer to that.
Well, I wrote about this in my piece of Salon about Biden's very heartfelt, sincere speech about the white supremacist terrorist attack in Buffalo. I wish Brother Biden, and I'm transparent. I voted for him before. I'll vote for him again. I think he's our last best chance to save this country's democracy for all of his faults, because I don't see anybody else being able to win or having any chance. Yeah. So I'm transparent in my criticism of the man. That having been said, he gave a very powerful speech, drawing on his own pain and loss. But guess what even Biden didn't do in his speech about white supremacy? He didn't mention white people specifically once, if you read it. He didn't call out the Republican fascists once, because he wants to be a unifier, a uniter. And it's not just Biden. Obama has done this. Other mainstream Democrats, other political leaders, left and right, you know, reasonable Republicans to the degree they exist anymore. When they talk about racism, they talk about it as a problem of all people. Hell, they're talking about white supremacy as some general vague thing like the weather. Joe Biden should have spoken directly to his fellow white Americans and said, we have to clean our house. Black and brown people were targeted by white supremacy and racism, but we didn't cause it, and it's not our problem. This is a particular problem of white America. So first of all, white brothers and sisters need to get their own house in order. Black and brown folk, we just trying to survive. Going beyond that, in this democracy crisis, we have to mobilize locally, establish relationships locally. Yes, they're going to steal the election. The coup has not stopped, so we need to outvote them. That's absolutely true. We need to get our money together, but we have to focus on survival and the long fight. This is going to be a decades-long fight because guess what? The Republicans, that Republican fascist movement, the Christo fascists, these neoliberal gangsters, the whole lot of them, they have been hostile to democracy since the end of the Civil Rights Movement, if not before. They have an alternative media. They have their own highly funded interest groups. Hell, they even make monies. They make movies, rather. You can go to AMC and movie theaters to watch. They have a whole system to propagandize their public. They have a whole network. We don't have that. We need to get started in creating it. We're well behind. Hell, we need to engage in corporeal politics. Why don't we have people of conscience, real pro-democracy Americans, out in the street every day? National strike. I don't see it. I see people tweeting and liking things. That ain't going to save you. And finally, we need to understand, especially in this moment when women's reproductive rights are being taken away, that's part of the authoritarian project. Voting will not be enough. They're anti-democratic. They're anti-democracy. This is the tyranny of the majority, rather the tyranny of the minority for the Republican fascists. They don't believe in your vote. They actually explicitly talk about how this country's not a democracy. They say it's a republic. They don't know what they're talking about. They're being dishonest, of course. It's strategic. What they're saying is people like us rule. People like you don't. You are to be silent. Where are the American people?
You know, to that point, too, about the stolen elections and taking away the votes, you've got the Republican nominee, I guess, in Colorado for governor, who is actively out there right now talking about, if I win, I'm going to switch the state of Colorado. I'm getting rid of one person, one vote, and I'm going to institute an electoral college here in the state of Colorado to basically ensure solid Republican rule. And anybody who can look at what is happening in this country today, whether it's, you know, the violence against the Black community at the hands of both, you know, shooters and police, whether it's the legislative assault on the LGBTQ community, whether it's critical race theory, whether it's the assault on women's reproductive freedom, all of this is getting more extreme. And it's almost by the month when the new shock comes out, right? A new piece of legislation or a new target, you know, targeting already vulnerable minority communities. You know, anything that's not a straight white man, for now, you're a target, and you're going to continue to be a target as long as Republicans keep trying to consolidate their power. And they're not going to stop until they've done it, not just nationally, but every state across this country. There's going to be no more purple states. They're going to be solid red states. That's what's happened here in the state of Florida. And it's getting worse, and it's getting worse by the week with Ron DeSantis. And this is intentional, and it's being done by targeting these vulnerable portions of the population.
And you got to take it a step further. It's not just the targeting, right? How does fascism, authoritarianism, this type of social dominance behavior, this collective mass psychopathology, I use that clinical language we're seeing on the right, how does it work the next step, right? You target other people to make yourselves feel good, right? That's what they do. They're experts. Republicans are experts in pain. We call this sadopolitics. Tim Snyder has written about this extensively. They hurt their own voters, too. But they can tell their voters, look, we're hurting those people over there. Gays, lesbian, queer, transgender, immigrants, migrants, Black and brown people. Put them in concentration camps. Go after teaching the real history of America in the schools. Target the teachers. Say they're grooming, right? Always some new enemy. Hurt people, hurt people, hurt people. And then that feeds their own followers psychologically and emotionally. That's the next step we have to take. And you're not seeing that type of truth telling and commentary in the mainstream American political discourse and the country's leaders, because they don't want to admit the country is that sick. They don't want to come out and say one of our main institutional political parties is fascist, anti-human, anti-social, and is actively, we can document it. Public health experts have looked at the coronavirus. Look at all the people who are deliberately, and I would suggest deliberately, I think it was democide, killed through negligence, indifference, active policymaking by the Trump regime and the Republicans. For profit, indifference. We can document all the people who'd be alive if it wasn't for them. We can go down the list of how their policies actually hurt and kill people. But see, that's the third rail. Because folks want to believe everything's somehow going to be okay. No, we have a fundamentally sick society. And sick societies produce sick leaders.
You know, and just speaking of COVID, the data is very clear, right? The deaths are higher in Republican areas. So this is a disease, you know, that is statistically killing more Republicans than Democrats. And yet Republicans still have their base out there that's dying at these, you know, alarming rates, celebrating not having to wear a mask. I mean, they're celebrating their own deaths. That is how deeply just I don't even think brainwashed is the right word, because these people were willingly doing this, but that's how deep they've got. You're celebrating your own demise because it means trying to oppress everybody else. That just blows my mind. It absolutely, I can't even, you know, begin to understand that kind of mindset.
Well, it's a particular type of contrariness, but it's tied up in a particular type of white freedom, right? And by that, I mean thinking about the state, the government. How dare the government tell me what to do? And we have a lot of, again, social psychology and other research about this, about mask wearing. Who's more reluctant and actively refusing to wear masks? Men, in particular, white men who are Republican, conservative, or authoritarian. Because how dare the government tell me to do something? And then there's actually some really powerful public health research. I interviewed the principal investigator over at Salon. This research just came out, should have gotten much more attention. What she discovered is that when white folk are made aware of racial disparities in terms of the coronavirus, they're less likely to wear masks. Moreover, even when they're told, you know, about systemic racism, institutional racism, nope, they don't care. And some of the respondents in her experiments are like, oh, that's a black or brown people disease, even though it's killing white people. And she found, again, that that hostility and indifference to black and brown people's lives actually made white folk less likely to wear the masks when we know it's killing everybody. So, again, white racism hurts and kills both folk, both sides of the color line, black, white, and brown. Jonathan Metzl's great book, Dying of Whiteness, examines public health, Obamacare, guns, drug use, the opioid epidemic, and consistently shows how a lot of white folk, literally the ones he talks to across red state America, they're indifferent to their suffering. They know something is wrong, but they're diehard Republicans and conservatives, even when the policies hurt them. Why? Despite black people. Why? Because that's black and brown people's problem. And I'm white and I'm free. And how dare the government tell me what to do?
And a lot of it also comes back to a concept that you and I have talked about in the past. And that is, yeah, their life sucks. Yeah, they're getting hurt by these Republican policies. But as the politicians tell them, you're only being hurt by these policies because of blank. And the blank is always the others, right? It's the people coming across the border. Oh, it's the lazy minority community that's living off welfare. They're having the time of their lives while you're struggling, making $3 an hour in that food processing plant or wherever it is. They're the problem, not us, not the laws that we're passing or not passing. It's everybody else. That's who's screwing up your life. That is what these Republicans are sadistically brilliant at doing, is convincing these people that every problem in your life is because of these other people. And of course, typically it's minorities.
White racial grievance politics. Point at the other people, the other, brown and black folk or some other group. Could be gays, lesbian, queers, immigrants, or the like. They're the ones who are doing it, not the corporate fat cats, not the Republican elites, not the plutocrats, the vast majority, if not all of them, who are white. And again, that's an old story in this country. Go back to the 17th century, often discussed, Bacon's Rebellion. We had black folk, white folk, indentured servants, who would become later on black folk, black human property, right? Black enslaved people working together to fight the planters. What the planters figure out? We break up the rebellion by giving white folks guns and giving them land, and we make black people perpetual slaves. That's an old con. Imagine the type of true We the People democracy we could make if folk united on both sides of the color line to pursue their shared class interests as human beings to make a truly humane society. And that's what they're terrified of. And as we see more changing racial demographics in this country, there's a whole discussion there. I think that's much exaggerated about what's actually happening out with the browning of America. But taking it on surface level, the Republicans, these Republican fascists, they know they cannot win if people vote. So what's the solution? A white, Christo-fascist, apartheid plutocracy. That's the end game, and that's what they're creating.
And eventually, you know, these white people who want to just pretend none of this is real, you got to understand, eventually they're going to run out of others. And something that you are is going to become the target eventually. You know, it doesn't just stay targeting one group. So if you think, well, you know, this maybe is not the best issue. It doesn't affect me. I'm not too worried about it. you will be. And as the old saying goes, there'll be nobody left to speak up for you at that point.
One day at a time. I always go back to that motto, and that's what the American people, people of conscience, you're going to have to understand. You got to live one day at a time, but also have vision. Because the whole point of this is to make you crazy, exhausted, learned helplessness. They want to break you psychologically and emotionally one crisis after another, but you have to have the long-term vision and understand the struggle for American democracy, human rights, dignity, both sides of the color line is going to take decades. They have been planning this attack for decades, and they're winning, and the Democratic Party is being steamrolled. That's why I tell folk when they email me, when they message me, what are you doing locally? What are you doing to establish democracy on a local level, getting to know your neighbors, learning the skills you're going to need to survive? This is a decades-long struggle, and when you have leading experts, these are very serious people who study national security, domestic terrorism and the like, saying America is on the precipice of a second civil war, at the very least, a sustained right-wing violent insurgency like you saw on January 6th, which is just the beginning. And there are going to be many more attacks like in Buffalo. Many, many more. The folks who study this have been warning about this for years. You're going to see another Oklahoma City. At the very least, these people are playing for keeps. They're prepared to kill and to die for their cause. You have to prepare yourself. You got to get ready for the long-term struggle, and liking and tweeting stuff on the internet and sharing it with your friends ain't going to do you a damn bit of good. Corporeal politics. Get to know your neighbors. Get ready for the long fight.
And get involved in local politics and make your local changes as well. I love you pointing out too, by the way, you know, sending out some great tweets. Yeah, you're going to get your likes on it, but you're really actually not changing anything. Look, Chauncey DeVega, as I said, you're absolutely one of my favorite people to talk to. I learn so much every time we speak. Even though I'm reading everything you're putting out, I'm still learning even more by talking to you. So tell everybody real quick where they can find you.
You got ChaunceyVega.com, my essays and writing at Salon, Twitter, Facebook. I got two podcasts. Use your Google machine or other way you download your podcast or find them, The Chauncey DeVega Show and The Truth Report.
Chauncey DeVega, thank you so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure.
That's it for this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But there's lots more show coming up for our members. And if you're not a member, go and sign up at ROFpodcast.com. You get the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. That's ROFpodcast.com. Your support is what helps keep this show going.